Chapter 2, The Start of the Jewish Revolt. The Jews looked longingly for the coming of the Messiah. He would deliver them from the dominion of the hated Romans. He would restore the ancient kingdom of David to its former glory. Oh, when the Jewish people thought of that, then their hearts throbbed with impatience. Then they burned with desire for that glorious future. Then the hated Roman soldiers would no longer march so haughtily through the streets of Jerusalem. Then no more would they have to pay taxes to their enemies. Then they would settle accounts with the many publicans, those despised traitors of their own people. When shall that moment dawn? That under the command of their own king, they shall drive the Romans out of their country? And with that thought in mind, the hatred in the hearts of the Jewish people increased against the strange intruders, against the Roman people. Jesus of Nazareth? Are you silly? He was not the Messiah. He was a deceiver. They had delivered him to the Romans. They had been witnesses of his ignominious death on the cross, and the followers of that Jesus were persecuted by them with fire and sword. Away with him! If they only heard the name Jesus, then they spit contemptibly on the ground. Behold, that is how most of the Jews thought and lived during those years that followed after the death and resurrection of the Lord Jesus. They did not believe that that despised Jesus of Nazareth was really the Messiah. They did not admit that they had rejected their king, their Redeemer. It did not come up in their mind that the severe judgment of God hung above their head, and that the severe punishment of an angry God drew near with rapid strides. Why, no, the Messiah still had to come. They were looking for him. They hoped upon him with their whole heart. It is true, there was no poverty at that time. There was an abundance of food. Many Jews rolled in wealth and prosperity. But the yoke of the Romans embittered everything for them. As long as the Romans were in the country, the Jews could not nor would be happy. The Jewish people were repeatedly startled by strange rumors. At one time they heard that the Messiah supposedly had appeared in a certain place. Then, for a moment, the hope would live in their heart. Could it be true? Many times a part of them would revolt. They believed for sure in the man who claimed to be the Messiah. But it came to nothing. The revolts were cruelly suppressed, and the Romans remained the boss. Then again, the Messiah was supposed to have appeared in another place. Again, hope and expectation. But it ended in a new disappointment, for again it came to nothing. They became impatient. Those blind Jewish people did not consider that the Lord Jesus had foretold that that would happen. Jesus had said, "For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many." That had become literally fulfilled. Jesus had foretold that false Christ would arise. That happened now, but the Jewish people were not aware of that. "Can you spare something for the poor governor?" "Look, many Jews walk the streets of Jerusalem with boxes and plates. From house to house they knock at every door, and everywhere the same question is heard. Have you alms for the poor governor? Their lips are curled with a contemptuous smile, and in their words is couched the deepest mockery and contempt. Various Jews walk along with the beggars. Laughing and mockery is heard everywhere. But what does all this mean? Why are the Jews doing that? Who is this poor governor? Don't you know? The begging Jews know it very well. Yea, all Jerusalem knows it. Oh, they clench their fists with hatred and blaze in their eyes. Do you also want to know? Just listen. At that time, the Roman governor Gessius Florus ruled over the Jewish country. He was not a noble, but a cruel man. He required from the Jewish people more than he should by demanding far too high taxes. Therefore, it is no wonder that he was hated by the Jews. Really, he had only himself to thank for it. That was his own fault. Instead of endeavoring to gain the love of the Jews, he was so cruel and wicked that the Jewish people rebelled against it. One day he had the treasury in the temple robbed. Now the rage of the Jews knows no bounds, because that had never happened before. In helpless rage, they clench their fists and ponder revenge. How does that heathen dare to put his hands to that which is holy? They must, and they shall, avenge themselves. But really, how shall they do it? If they revolt, then that will be of little avail, because the Roman soldiers shall cruelly beat down that revolt. For that reason, the Jews reach for the weapon of mockery. Does Gessius Florus need money? Well then they will help him. They will go and beg for him. For that reason, many Jews walk the streets of Jerusalem with boxes and plates. For that reason, they ask everywhere, "Have you an alms for the poor governor?" That was a flagrant insult to the proud Roman governor. Oh, they want to grieve him most deeply. They want to deliver him up to the scorn and derision of all the Jewish people. When Gessius Florus hears what is taking place in Jerusalem and learns how everywhere and openly the Jews mock him, then he turns pale with rage. While gnashing his teeth, he gives his commands. Soon a detachment of Roman soldiers with drawn swords march from the encampment. The begging, mocking Jews are suddenly attacked. A wailing cry ascends, and soon the streets are covered with dead bodies, because without pity the embittered Romans put to the sword all whom they meet. In that horrible massacre, 3,000 Jews lost their lives. The mocking and laughing of the Jews changes into cries of distress, and everyone endeavors to save his life by a hasty flight. Shortly after that, a strange silence prevails in the streets of Jerusalem, which otherwise were so busy. It is the silence of death. Gessius Florus grins falsely. Just wait. He will knock that nonsense out of those despised Jews. He sends a messenger to Caesarea, and soon more Roman soldiers approach Jerusalem. King Agrippa, the same Agrippa who visited Festus at one time and on that occasion wanted to hear the Apostle Paul, fears a general revolt because he knows the Jewish people thoroughly. His sister Bernice goes to the provoked governor Gessius Florus and begs pardon for the Jewish people. The answer of the haughty Roman is, "Very well, because you ask for it, I shall forgive them. But then the most prominent Jews of Jerusalem must go and meet the Roman forces which are on the way from Caesarea to Jerusalem, and they must solemnly promise that in the future they shall obey." And do the Jewish rulers agree to that? Yes, just look. They leave Jerusalem, and when they come to the approaching Romans, they bow themselves deeply before them. That is a sign of their subjection and submission. But the Roman soldiers do not acknowledge that greeting. They remain standing haughtily and unapproachable. Contempt is in their eyes. That is too much for the Jews. Once more, rage rises within them. Angry screams ring out. They are shrieks of rage and disappointment. A brief command resounds, and with unsheathed swords, the Romans fall again upon the defenseless Jews. For the second time, a bloody massacre takes place. With the Jews, that is the drop which causes the bucket to run over. All Jerusalem revolts and takes up arms. The cry is heard everywhere, "Death to the Romans! Death to the Romans!" It becomes so bad that the Roman governor Gessius Florus can no longer bear up against it. He abandons the Jewish capital city and flees to Caesarea. To save their lives, a part of the Roman soldiers who were always in Jerusalem fled to some fortified towers. It would take too long to tell everything what happened in those uproarious days, but that is how the Jewish revolt commenced. Not only the Jews of Jerusalem rebel, but the entire country takes up arms. King Agrippa, who hears all this, hastens to the rebellious city. He will endeavor to calm the Jews. He will endeavor to save what can be saved. But his good intentions fail. He has to flee too, and behind his back, the provoked Jews set fire to his beautiful palace. In the beginning, the revolting Jews gain one victory after another. Cestius, the Roman governor, marches with a large army to Jerusalem, but he is badly defeated. Thousands of Romans are killed. The Roman soldiers who had withdrawn themselves into those fortified towers had to surrender themselves. The Jews had promised them that they would spare their lives and that they would be allowed to march out freely. But the Jews shamefully broke their promise, for as soon as the Romans opened the gates and delivered up their arms, they were all cut down by the Jewish besiegers and were cowardly murdered. That was cruel. That was false. They had been solemnly promised that they would have an unobstructed retreat. But when that becomes known, the Romans murdered thousands of innocent and defenseless Jews who lived everywhere in Roman cities. Meanwhile, the Romans were driven out of entire Palestine, and the Jews think they have already gained the victory. An excessive joy prevails among them, but they are sorely mistaken, because... Before I proceed with this history, I must tell you something else. The Lord Jesus had said, "When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. That was a warning to the Christians. The Lord Jesus had foretold that dark days would come. He had foretold that Jerusalem would be destroyed, and so badly that not one stone would be left upon another. But then the Christians had to flee to the mountains. They would have to flee when they saw the abomination of desolation. Thus sounded the command of the Son of God. Many Christians still lived in Jerusalem. Indeed, the first Christian church was founded in Jerusalem. Due to the violent persecutions, many Christians had fled, but not all. Well then, now the abomination of desolation was seen. There was fierce fighting between the revolting Jews and the Roman armies. During that time, the Christians which were still in Jerusalem fled. They heeded the warning of the Lord. They hastily left the wretched city and hurried to the mountains. They fled beyond Jordan and went to dwell in the little city of Pella. Not one Christian perished when Jerusalem was destroyed. The Lord preserved them from that terrible misery. They were safe in Pella, for the Romans did not come there. There they did not fight. In the great metropolis, Rome, lived that wicked, cruel emperor Nero in his beautiful palace. Later you will hear more of him. Nero thought only of feasting and making merry, but now he hears of the dangerous revolt of the Jews. He hears that the Roman soldiers have been defeated. He hears that thousands of them have been killed. For him, those are evil tidings, for that can become very dangerous. Just imagine if the other subjected nations hear of that and revolt too. Then it is finished with the Roman power. For that reason, he sends a very great army to the Jewish country, more than 60,000 men strong. The revolting Jews must be subdued again. One of his best generals is in command of that large army. That general's name is Vespasian. Now then, Vespasian marches with that powerful army as fast as he can to the border of Palestine. The Jews in Jerusalem hear of that and shall endeavor to keep Vespasian back. The Jewish general, Josephus, must defend Galilee. There he must repulse the Romans. Soon both armies draw near to each other. There is fierce fighting. The Jews defend themselves with a desperate courage. But their contempt for death is of no avail. They are defeated. As fast as he can, Josephus rallies the rest of his defeated army and commences the battle again. Another failure. They are defeated for the second time. Josephus flees with the remainder of his army to the strong city of Jotapata. However, the Roman general Vespasian pursues after Josephus and immediately lays siege to that Jewish fortress. The fighting for the city Jotapata was terrible. The struggle for that city lasted 47 days, hence almost 7 weeks. At one time, the Romans succeeded in forcing themselves into that fortress, but they were driven out again by the Jews. Hundreds of Roman soldiers were pushed by the Jews into the fathomless depths, so that they were dashed to pieces upon the sharp rocks. Finally, the city of Jotapata was taken by the Romans, and now, on account of their many dead, The embittered Romans take bloody vengeance. Some authors say more than 40,000 Jews were murdered, men, women, children, and gray-headed. Without mercy, the Romans killed great and small, young and old. The streets were colored red with blood. Josephus, the Jewish general, with 40 comrades in arms, fled to a cave in the vicinity of the city. Nevertheless, they were discovered by the Roman soldiers. What now? Surrender? No, the majority won't do that. Rather dead than fall into the hands of the Romans. They resolve to kill each other. The lot will indicate whose turn it will be. The last one shall kill himself. And, thus write some, Josephus is the last survivor. However, he does not kill himself, but is taken prisoner by the Romans. Presently he stands before the powerful Roman general Vespasian. He does not have him put to death, but forms friendship with him. Josephus always remained with the Romans. Josephus did not fight against his own people, but he constantly endeavored to convince the Jews that they would lose this conflict. In the long run, they will not be able to hold out against the powerful and better armed Roman armies. He continually tells them, "Surrender yourselves." But the Jews do not listen to him. Scornfully, they call him a traitor. He is denounced as a deserter, a turncoat. What? Surrender? Never. Rather dead than to become prisoners to the Romans. The war continues undiminished. City after city is conquered by Vespasian. When the Romans penetrate into the fortress Gamala, then the Jewish defenders drag their own wives and children to a deep abyss in the neighborhood. They first hurl their wives into the fathomless depth, then they hurl their children, and finally they themselves jump after their wives and children. What a terrible blindness and hardening has come upon the Jewish people. However valiant they defend themselves, it is to no avail. They are defeated everywhere, and soon all of Galilee has been conquered by the Romans. Now Vespasian marches to the capital, to Jerusalem. Once that capital has been taken, then the war is at an end. The downfall seems to be near. But then, suddenly Vespasian, the valiant Roman general, leaves the army and departs hastily for Rome. Ah, why? Has he become afraid? Is he fleeing? Why, no, on the contrary. But Nero, the emperor, has been murdered by a slave. And now the army has proclaimed Vespasian their commander as emperor. However, the people of Rome have crowned another emperor. Now there are two emperors at the same time. That, of course, cannot be. For that reason, Vespasian hastened to Rome. A brief struggle, and the other emperor is defeated and killed. Now then, Vespasian alone is emperor. Once he is settled upon the throne, he sends his son Titus to Jerusalem. He must continue and finish the war against the Jews. He must conquer Jerusalem and put down the last opposition. Because of these events, Jerusalem obtained a temporary delay of 1.5 years. The war was at a standstill for about 18 months. But instead of the Jews repenting, instead of employing those 18 months to fortify the city and preparing themselves for the coming struggle, a terrible civil war rages within Jerusalem itself. It seems as if the Jews are totally blind, and that is what they really are. They themselves contribute to hasten their own ruin. But I will tell you about that in the next chapters.